Welcome to Dance Specific Talks. This podcast is made for us dancers, and our goal here is to inspire dancers from all over the world to become better, both on and off the dance floor. We want to provide you with a platform where we dancers can share and learn from each other. So let me introduce to you your host for this podcast, Teaser, and remember as always, by dancers, for dancers.
Today is not another episode. Today, this podcast is celebrating 1 year. And for the first time ever, I have invited someone who does not know that he is going to be interviewed. And we're going to interview one of the most important people in my life. Not only is he a dancer, my crewmate, my dance partner in Kizomba, but he's also my boyfriend since 8 years. I want to welcome our guest for this 1 year anniversary episode. No one else than Mally from Fuse Back. I don't bluff, bro. Aiming at your head like a buffalo. You're a roughneck. I'm a cutthroat. You're a tough guy. That's enough jokes. Then the sun died. The night is young, though. The diamond still shines. In a rough hole. What the fuck, though? Where the love go? So what do you need to know about Mally? Not only has this guy lived in 3 different continents before the age of 19, he has also tried out dancing quite late in his life. But I want to dig deeper into where it came from. And I asked friends and family to send me questions of what they would like to ask him when it comes to his dancing. I am super excited to surprise him. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and like. It is the 1 year anniversary. Don't forget to share your favorite episode. And now, let's get it going. Welcome to this interview, Mally. Welcome to Dance Specific Talks. This is your interview.
Hey, yeah, cool. What's up?
Nice. All right, so you basically have no idea that we're doing this. You just logged into your computer and you have no idea what's going on, are you?
Yeah, no, I have no clue. I'm quite unprepared, yeah.
So I decided to do this interview with you because it has been 1 year. You have been my rock, my cheerleader. You've been there from the start, from when this was just an idea, not even an idea. And a lot of people don't know that you have been behind me, helping me, supporting me, and motivating me to do this podcast.
Congrats on your 1 year anniversary.
Right, right. Well, right. I feel like I want to congratulate us both because you have also been like supportive throughout this whole journey, and it cannot have been easy seeing me in my ups and downs. And yeah, I just wanted to take my time out to say thank you and I appreciate you for all the support that I have got the last year.
It's all good. It's all love.
So a lot of people that listen to this podcast know that we are a couple, but we are also crewmates and we're also dance partners at Castle of Dance. Throughout this corona, we've been together 24/7 for almost a year. And this is the first time we are separate since the summer. You literally was there when I first got the idea. I remember us cheering in the kitchen when I got into Spotify and when I bought my first microphone and all of this. So I kind of just want to take the time out to ask you how it's been for you watching this podcast grow for the last year.
It's been phenomenal. It's been quite cool. I'll be honest. I think, as you say, the initial idea was really just a conversation on the kitchen table and just like how that, to see how that went from the conversation to, yeah, you getting your first equipment, seeing you stress around about recording equipment or at least recording software. just like, how do you record this stuff? How do you cut and clip this stuff? With the video part as well, like cutting and editing the videos. It's been quite a process. So it's interesting. It's interesting, but also cool to see like where it started, the stress of it all, of where it started, to how easily and how flowy it's become over time. But also how widespread it is, right? So there is like the audience is huge. Also, the people you've talked to are literally scattered all over the world. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. It's been as a firsthand observer, or let's say passenger seat observer, I've felt really happy. I think for every new milestone, for every new milestone the podcast hit, it's been like, yeah, that's nice. That's probably been the best part about all this, just like seeing everything and knowing where it started from.
You have seen it all, from me being jumping around excited because I just booked a new call with someone,
And at the same time, we always joked about that I will interview every dancer in the entire world, but not the closest one. And that's why I really wanted to wait until we hit that 1 year mark and really just celebrate this time with you as my most special episode so far. And I love that we can do this right now as I'm in Sweden watching the snow fall down and you're still in Amsterdam. I feel like this is basically an interview I do with all the artists on Zoom, but it is with you that I spend every day of my life with.
It's mad trippy for sure.
What would you say, based on the episodes you've been listening to, have been your favorite?
I definitely enjoyed the Orville conversation. I enjoyed the conversation with Mr. YouTube, the Lightfeet, one of the Lightfeet pioneers. I re-listened to the one with Paul from Kenya. That was a fantastic interview.
Yeah, and I also don't always let you have the time to listen because I am like bubbling after every single interview about like, oh my gosh, he said this and she told me this story. So sometimes I feel like I am giving you all what I've done in my podcast on like a verbal face-to-face kind of basis. Seeing this podcast develop, what would you say have been one of your biggest takeaways?
There are some really dope and gifted people in the world. And they don't have to necessarily stand on big stages and they don't necessarily have to be world famous for them to be, you know, talented and just like dope. That's one thing that's like I realize every time I listen to some one of your episodes. It's like, wow, they're really cool people who are just like going through everyday life, their everyday lives and doing the things they love and figuring it out, you know. So I think that's valuable. That's a valuable life lesson, period. So from the process of the podcast growing, I think the key thing has been do more, just like think less, do more. It goes from you thinking, I want to talk to Nyako, to you actually talking to Nyako because you contacted Nyako, you know? It's the biggest lesson, less thinking, more doing.
I'm not sure that I would have been able to do that if you also didn't give me enough confidence to do so. Like every time I come up with a suggestion, I'm like, oh my gosh, should I really reach out to this huge dancer? And I just never felt anything else but love and support from you. Like, go for it. You know, like, what is the worst thing that can happen? In that process, I also really, really hope that I have inspired you and maybe others too to go for something that is very scary. What a lot of people also know is that you are a dancer, of course. But it all started in a different time and era. So I would love to rewind back to 2012 when you and I met for the first time. And I would love to talk about the dance experience we had then.
Go for it. Fantastic.
When I wanted to do this podcast, what you haven't known before this is that I have reached out to all of our friends and family and asked them to come up with questions. Because I know a lot of things about you, but I wonder what people wonder about you. So our bro, Shamalo, reached out and said, why don't we talk about the first time Malcolm tried to impress you with dance?
Of course he did. Yeah, all right, cool. Boom. So 2012, that's an accurate time. I did start dancing, I'd say, a year after that. But before that, I wouldn't say I was a dancer. I would say I had experience with music and thought that I could dance. So I think I remember that we were at a club and me trying to impress you was me using moves I saw from movies, right? So I particularly You Got Served. That was like one of my favorite. I didn't have it as a dance movie, but it was just like one of my favorite movies that had dance in it. But yeah, so I think this is fun. You were there with one of your former crewmates. I was there with a really good friend of mine, Emmett, and I tried to do the wave, right? So that was like literally my first dance move that I tried to impress you with. I don't remember the music that I was playing, but it matched the flow. So I felt like, yeah, you know, this girl here, she doesn't know the moves. You know, I've got the moves somewhere down here. I got to hit her with the move that's gonna catch her. And that was the wave. Now, I didn't know that you had spent X amount of years. Like, you've been dancing since you were 13, maybe even younger, right? So I didn't know that you've been dancing for that long in that moment at the club. I thought, yeah, here's a girl that I'm going to impress and she doesn't know anything about movement. And I did a wave. But the funny thing was that I did a slow motion wave, right? So it was one of those like, like super effects, you know, because that's what they did in the movie. They put the, they slowed down the movements. So that's, that's the first time when we were in the club, and to my advantage, you did not bust any move afterwards. I think you had a good little laugh of it.
Throughout the evening, you kind of figured out that me and my crewmate were kind of very used to dance in clubs. But what is more interesting is that once we got to know each other, like I knew from the first time I met you that your love for music has always been there, and especially for hip hop culture. And I felt like even though you weren't a trained dancer, I was definitely not a rapper, but we could find common ground in the love for hip hop culture. And we understood each other, even though we came from different elements, because you were actually rapping more at this time rather than dancing. Where you grew up in Dar es Salaam, there was another dance style that was very common. And I had a phone call with your mom earlier today. And just to check out like how it was, you know, how was Malcolm as a kid? She told me that when she had you, she, as some of us know, were one of the national basketball players of Tanzania. And she always felt that once she gets a child, she wants to be able to give that child all the opportunities that she did not have. Now, Ngoma was something that your mom actually competed in the school. Her school competed with other different schools in the style of Ngoma. And this was also something that you got to learn in your primary school. Tell me a little bit about what you remember from dancing in school when you grew up in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Mom Dukes on the backspin. I've got to hand it to her. She's good. Yeah, so Ngoma. So yeah, maybe I can define that. So Ngoma is the instruments, so the drums that you would have in Tanzania. Any kind of drum is called Ngoma. But then you have traditional dances that are attached to it. And to make the history long story short, every tribe in Tanzania has their own specific Ngoma, has their own specific type of dance. I don't exactly remember which tribes Ngoma I learned first. But yeah, it was something that we had in school. We had it during PE. So PE is physical education. That's what people would call gym, or yeah, it's where you would do sports. And one of the many things was Ngoma. But then you could also have it as an extracurricular activity. So if you really enjoyed dancing Ngoma, you could go and do that as well. Yeah, I think it's interesting. So I haven't really thought about this for a while, but our schools did compete. So I spent some time at the PE classes. I really enjoyed it. And I think I told my mom or something, or maybe she recognized that I enjoyed it. And I actually did the extracurriculars, and you're part of a club. And then the club represents the school in competitions, in different Ngoma competitions, which is cool. Like, I don't know. I think for me at the time, it didn't feel like anything special because everyone else was doing it. You know, it's not like I've come to learn later on that, you know, dance in some cultures is, you know, a thing because, you know, it's something that you choose. Whereas in some cultures, it's just like, yeah, this is what everyone does. So you do it. But it was cool. I think I found my love for music probably, I'm not going to say with Ngoma, but I found a way to channel some kind of energy there, which is kind of like stuck with me throughout life.
She told me that you used to lock yourself up in your room in the weekends playing R&B music, dancing, and singing.
Yeah, facts. So that's the thing. Like, I've never, until I met you and until I officially took my first classes, like, later on in life, I've always danced, but I've never, you know, it's never been like, I was never known as the dancer. I never profiled myself as the kid who was the dancer. I played football as a kid. I ran. You know, did kid stuff. But yeah, that is a fact. I have hours that I've spent in my room just playing music and getting lost in music, R&B especially. So mom played a lot of like old school soul, old school funk, like the music that she grew up to. I don't think she was curating any kind of lists. You know, I think it was more like, oh, I like listening to Whitney Houston, so I'll play Whitney Houston. I like, you know, SWV, so I'll play SWV. And I kind of fed onto that. So I would lock myself up in my room and practice moves, or just like be part of the music somehow. And that was cool. And yeah. Actually, not that many people know that. So now the world knows. So, but that is something definitely I did.
She also mentioned that, like, if there would have been maybe dance schools or something similar in Dar es Salaam, she probably would have, you know, taken you there. But since it didn't really exist, it kind of never went that way. But instead, you took all that charisma and you became a TV show leader as a child. And for years, you were leading this child's TV program in Tanzania every Saturday morning, was it?
Yeah, Watoto Wetu, that's the name of the show. oh, all right. I love the fact that I was super unprepared for this.
I love it, yeah. Too. This is the best.
So, yeah, no. So I spent some time being a TV presenter. So it was a TV show. It was a live show that happened every Saturday. So you would have kids that came in, sat in the audience, and I would be the presenter or the moderator or something like this. And yeah, it kind of works the way TV shows work. You have a theme maybe of the day. There are different sections. So they're like, now it's quiz, like trivia time. I've got some questions, somebody answers. Oh, now we have some activities like small games and stuff. Yeah, but it was mostly like it was catered to kids. I did that for a few years. If you ask my friends that I went to Aga Khan primary school with, they all know me as the presenter on TV, or at least that's that's definitely like a characteristic I have. That's Malcolm from Watoto Wetu. And you're right, I took all the energy of not maybe being able to dance or not having this dance outlet and just like did other things. I think I was very hyperactive anyway. Presenting was one of those things that was cool to do early. Brought me in front of a camera really early.
No, I can definitely see how that has followed you, like, into all the rest of the things that you have taken on, that you are not afraid of just stepping in there. That is also something your mom, by the way, takes credit for. Like, she's all in or nothing, and she's like, he got it from me. Yeah.
Facts.
Shout out, mom. Shout out.
Yeah, facts. 100%. She gets it. She's the queen. She's the queen. She gets it.
What I love about your life is that it has like very distinct chapters. So when you were like about around 12, you moved alone to the States to do high school. You moved in with your auntie. And that was like a culture shock in itself. But you started another path then. Like your love for music, R&B, had gone into rap. And when you got to the States, this was like one of your obvious choice to go for. How do you think that like the rap career you had in the States has kind of shaped you as a person?
The rap career.
I mean, I would still say you performed like a couple of times.
The rap career. It's cool. I think, for sure. So when I was 12, I definitely moved alone to the States to live with my aunt. And that was a dream come true in many ways, because at some point in time before I was 12, like maybe around 10 or something, I realized I love hip hop culture. I don't know why I loved hip hop culture. I actually didn't know hip hop was a culture. I just knew there is this music that my uncle sends me in these burnt VHSs or these burnt CDs that I fucking love. And this at this moment, my uncle lived in the States, right? So every time he sent these things back, I was like, yo, I love this. I love everything about it. Everything about, you know, the culture. It was also around the time, like, yeah, you have your 50 cents, like the 2000s, right? So it's the 2000s where everything was glossy and glittery in some way. And yeah, so the commercial side of hip hop culture was being very like broadcast to the world. And I was one of the people who got locked into it. So fast forward when I'm 12 and I moved to the States, yeah, naturally I started rapping or wanted to rap rather. So I kind of like did study of how, what is it to rap? What does that mean? Like when you're a rapper, where does that come from? If I look back now, it was interesting because it was one of the first times I took an interest and like really deep dived into an interest. One of the things that has carried with, like I've taken from my rap career towards in life is just like when I'm interested in something, it's good to understand the essence of that something, like what is it? Why is it? Why does it exist? Like, why is it there? Why? Okay, people are rapping, but why? You know, or people are dancing, but why? You know, we don't have to dance, kind of thing, or we don't have to rap, but we're doing it still. That started in a side of me that became really interested in knowing the essence of things. And my uncle's then wife, Msia Clark, she noticed that I was a sponge, and she just fed me, because she was teaching Pan-African studies and African history, I think, at Howard University. And when I had just first moved to the States, I didn't really have that many connections, like friends-wise. So I would hang out with the adults, or rather, I would look to the adults to give me shit to do. Because, yeah, I have to figure something out. And she was a teacher, she was a professor, and she needed like some interning. So I spent a few summers interning for her, like the first few summers when I moved, just interning. And I would go there every time I had free time, basically. I would try and hang out with her. So she was the other channel that kind of understood that, oh, you really are interested in this hip hop. Because no one else, again, in my family, yeah, hip hop was more a fun, like music was a fun thing. It's not something that you study. But I was more on a form of like, I want to understand this. Like, why is this here? She understood it. She gave me books, took her time to like really teach me what she knew and what her understanding of the culture of hip hop, what that was. So there were deep sessions, man. It was things that made me appreciate like, oh, wow. Yeah, there are things that are made at a certain time. They can just like captivate the world. So hip hop's essence, like the pure essence of it, where it's a party, almost a welcoming party culture. Like it started off in the streets, Kool Herc, one guy with a sound system, taking inspiration from his Jamaican roots and his parents, bringing that to like the Bronx and like, hey guys, I just want to, you know, play music. I've got the livest sound system, and people showing up and dancing or partying or, you know, hooking up or whatever. And that just comes from this this little essence. That, like, understanding that about hip hop, just, I don't know, it gave me an understanding of like, wow, something so small can make such a big impact on everyone. So appreciation, I guess.
This curiosity of learning and appreciating that there are worlds out there that we could actually just dive into and learn about. When you started, if we're going to jump now back to the dancing, you started with like the other side of dancing, which I was not familiar with, which was more dancing in the gyms.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. At some point in time, I think I was like aiming to be a trainer. Because I studied sports for about a year, got like a certification as a, I wouldn't say a trainer, but like as a sports theorist or whatever, it doesn't matter. But in my study of sports, I really saw Zumba, which is one of the first, I guess if we say dance-wise, that was the first dance incorporated thing in my life, where I was like, oh, wow, this is training and something I actually enjoyed before, which is Zumba. And I think that's how we met. And for me, I guess at that point, that's what, not what dance was, but that's what was the physical thing that could keep the body active. And that was cool. I appreciated my Zumba time. You know, it taught me also in like instructing, because as a whether you're an aerobics leader or whether you are a like a trainer at a gym or whether you are leading when you're leading a group class, basically, you just need to be present. You need to be there. You need to be able to share. And in that moment, I could tap in into that being the presenter in as a kid with a bunch of other kids, just being present and being there. So. Yeah, I enjoyed that, and it gave me confidence in like, oh well, you could move, until I actually had to start learning some fundamentals, you know.
Exactly. It was interesting because yeah. So this was when you have actually moved to Sweden, and we're jumping, of course, a little bit back and forward here with the years. No but worries. You moved to Sweden, 2012. You started your sport education. And the Zumba thing was something that you did when we met. And I remember the first like culture clash in that, like you were just so happy doing this. And it was a bunch of mix of styles. There was like a salsa step here and a little pas de bourrée over there. Yeah. And there was like a stepping, and I was just confused because I was so, you know, in my bubble of like, what is every specific style? And I had been doing it my entire life. And I just remember loving seeing someone so happy and appreciated of just moving to music and not being so scared of labels or am I doing the step in the right technique. And it was something freeing for me as a trained, if you want to call it that, trained dancer, to see someone like you being like completely just feeling yourself with all these songs and choreos that you had to put together.
Hey, it's there's something to it. I think like you said, there's salsa, there's cumbia, there's a bunch of like a lot of elements taken from different like South American, Central American cultural styles. But the music in the end makes you move. There's a reason why people like pay big money to go to these group classes, you know, or still do during pandemic. It's like it brings out a really feel good feeling.
Yeah. And once we got together, like I remember inviting you to some of my shows that I was performing at Twisted Feet in Gothenburg. And like, I think maybe a half year or a year after we became a couple, you started taking your first house class. Yeah. And since we can't go into details exactly about what happened there, but let's just say you took one class the first semester. You took five classes the second semester, and then it was like you were a dancer. It went so fast. Like a lot of people around you, including me, was very impressed and a bit in shock that someone starting dancing when they're 19 can elevate so fast, and not just with choreo, but actually freestyling. So my question, or actually one of our friends asked this question, how was it for you to get into dance culture compared to the other cultures like rap or different sports that you had been active to? What was the biggest difference to get into dance culture?
I would say the biggest difference was that the culture was different. Like it was a dance culture. If I liken this like the football part, it's still the same. The elements are still the same. You're coming into a room of people who are there because they love or are interested in doing this one thing. So that's not different. The form is different. People now move. Like here in the dance culture, people are dancing more. And in the football culture, people are like kicking a ball. But I actually don't see that much of a difference. So maybe that's also why it wasn't so weird for me, because I could see like there are elements that I could take from when I played football. There are elements I can take when I was rapping and like going to different cafes and trying to, you know, get connected to a rap culture. The elements are all the same. There are people who are passionate enough about something to take time out of their own, you know, daily routines to go and do this thing. And the funny thing is, in all these three elements, you have people who do it for fun, but you also have people who study this. Like football, you have people who look at the history of like who's the best striker, which coach has the best strategies. In rap, you look at, okay, so who's the lyricist, who's the best lyricist, or like what are the essence of good lyricism. In dance, it's the same thing. It's like who's the best dancer, what are the essence of good dance. But I guess a shock maybe would be that I was older. And not only are you coming into a culture, you're also coming into like people who are also growing up. So you have life happening as well. You know what I mean? Like it's not just dance. It's people's like lives as well. Like all of a sudden I'm in a culture where, you know, people have to pay the bills in order to do it. You know, it's also different. It's different how people approach it. It's different how I like my whole appreciation. And my understanding of the culture was formed. Like, okay, this is something that's fun, but I clearly see that my teacher does this class, another class, another class, and another class in order to have a livelihood. Like, this is also a lifestyle. It's not just it's not just like a fun thing to do. And maybe I can say this. I think another cultural shock or just like a difference was that my reference to hip, I referred to my hip hop knowledge or my hip hop rap knowledge onto dance. And it was never always a match. It was never one and one, right? So if in my head, let's say when I started taking hip hop classes, in my head, I would think like my reference for New York or whatever would be Wu-Tang. Whereas the reference for a dancer would be something completely different, maybe breakdance. And that's a completely different spectrum within the same, what is it called? Different side of the same coin. So that was actually not hard, but it was a realization I had to pick up quick. Like, oh yeah, just because I think I know or have an idea of this doesn't mean I have an idea of like, yeah, I had to relearn everything, you know?
Right. So, and also that dancers not necessarily always listen to rap music.
No, but true.
Listen to instrumentals or listen to DJs, you know, like, yeah. I remember when we have been discussing hip hop and we just completely know different things. Like, of course, I also know about Kool Herc and Grandmaster Flash and all this, but I also know about Electric Boogaloo and like the old school dancers that were fundamental for that element. So yeah, it was a lot when you started to kind of just get into what are the specific styles and what history do they, where are they coming from, all of them. You started with house, and another of the questions that I got for you was which style has influenced you the most, both movement-wise, but also mentally?
Oof. I like house. I think because I started with house, I'm very comfortable in house. And my movement over, like, yeah. So I dance on my toes, I usually say. Like, I dance in the balls of my feet. And I think that literally comes from me having taken house as a first class. Like, if I had taken, I don't know, any other class that didn't need me to be, like, quick-footed, then I probably wouldn't have that. So I think actually the house style has influenced my dance in many, like, very, very clearly. And if I look at my dance now, there are a lot of elements, whether it's the footwork, whether it's like grooving up and stuff like this. There are many elements that are there. So it's the influence. And what was the other thing? Sorry.
What has influenced you both movement-wise, but also mentally?
Yeah. Mentally, I'll be honest, I don't know, because I think I'm still on a journey of trying to figure that out. I'm not there yet. I know there was a time when I did a lot of, there was a time when like hip hop was a main focus, and then my mental focus was just hip hop. When we started dancing Kizomba, for example, my mental focus also changed there. There was a time I was dancing a lot on the ground, like taking classes for doing like experimental-esque kind of things. And my mental focus was really on like movement. So I wouldn't say that there is a specific style that has influenced me mentally. I think all of them have in many different ways.
Yeah. And we got one question from our mutual friend Kuda, and he was asking about your freestyle. What goes through your mind when you freestyle?
Yeah, it depends on the mode. But most of the, like lately, it's just been air, like thinking of trying to be as clear as air. But there are a lot of things. It really depends on the mood. When I've had a stressful day, then my freestyle doesn't reflect the stress, but rather reflects the letting go of it. Like, okay, I don't want to think of anything else. And, you know, sometimes there are stories. Sometimes I think of a particular memory and I flow around that particular memory. Sometimes it could be the words of a song. But almost always, I would say lately, it's just like I'm trying to clear my mind. It's almost like a meditation. Like I'm not trying to notice the thoughts. So I'm not trying to notice what goes through my mind. I'm just trying to move through it.
Yeah. It's funny because that is also one of the things that was so impressive when you started, was that you very quickly started to train freestyle, which is a lot of new dancers are scared of. Like, they want to learn moves and choreos, and you kind of directly went into also freestyle. We always joke about that no matter how many battles I have been winning throughout the years, your first rookie battle made you bring home the biggest trophy I have ever seen, which is like a current running joke for us that all your rookie battles gave you all the biggest trophies.
I'll take it.
I will forever look at my little trophies and wonder what happened in that case, you know. But you have been through a lot. Not only have you battled and you have been maturing within your freestyle, but you also started with Kizomba with our crew. We started a crew together and we've been touring, we've been performing. Suddenly we've done workshops, we've been competing together in crews. Like, there's just been a lot on our journey. What is one thing that you never thought that you would experience when you started off dancing?
I didn't think I would travel with dancing. Like, that's for sure, like, nothing that was on my bucket list. Or maybe not bucket list isn't the right word, but that wasn't something that was on my chart of things. I've been able to do a few cool things with dance. Like, as you said, we've learned a few different styles. Together with some good friends, we put together a collective. And, yeah, I don't know, tried fusing a style. And I think I say this a lot, but I could be wrong. I really don't. So Fuse Fam, our dance crew, fused hip hop, or what we like, our styles within hip hop culture. So it was everything from house to whacking to like dancehall to locking to whatever. Fused that with Kizomba quite early. I think this was around 2013. We did our first show 2015, right? Mm-hmm. So we joined 2014 and did the show in 2015. I am not sure, actually, if there is any other crew, not individual dancer, but crew. I am not sure if there's any other crew that has done that within that sphere. You know what I mean? So if that is true, then that's also one thing that I could never think about with dance, like creating something like that, like being one of the initial points of like, yeah, would just be a couple of people fusing these different styles together. On that level. So yeah, it's been a few things, man. But traveling has definitely been one of those. I've seen so many different parts of the world because of it. That I would have never in my own, like in my own right, probably tried to see. Like, yeah, I've been to Lebanon, I've been to Turkey, been to Dubai. England. Yeah, Norway, I guess, is a neighbor of Sweden, so it's not such a big feat. But like, yeah, Estonia. There are a few different places, the States. Yeah, I don't know. There are a few different places that kind of like dance has kind of opened up doors with, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure. Another question that came along here was if you could share something about a dance experience that you have never told anyone before.
If I could share something about a dance experience that I've never told anyone before.
I know this is a hard one. I know the most things, but I mean, there might be something here.
Maybe. I have to really think. I might just be boring. I think I've told most of the stories. There isn't anything that I haven't really told, probably, but there are a few memorable pieces. On the freestyle part, my first battle against Ashkam. I think this was literally my first hip hop battle. And I went up against Ash, and I think Ash was also my teacher at this point. He was teaching at Twisted. And I think, yeah, personally, I think I did quite okay. But I remember, so this I thought when Ash started dancing was just like, oh, I get it. Oh, like, oh, wow, he's having a conversation now. Because in the moment, I think I was, yeah, so I was not that mature in my movement. I was just like moving. But he actually took the stage and had a full on conversation with it. And then that was an enlightening moment for me. Just like, oh, you could have a conversation with your movement. It's more than just like, you know, and a one and a two and a three and a four and a five and a six and a seven and an eight. You know what I mean? You can actually have a combo. Yeah, but I don't think I have that many that I haven't really told anyone. There've been a few cool ones though.
Yeah, you've been in quite a lot of battles already. And one question that I always ask people that are battling is like, how are you like mentally preparing when you are going up in a battle?
In the beginning, I'd say I didn't do any kind of mental preparation because I didn't think that was like, it was not something I was present about. It wasn't something like, yeah. So maybe it's everyone who starts out. When you start out dancing, you don't think about, oh, I'm about to go in battle. I need to mentally prepare for this. Like, it's not a Mike Tyson fight, really. But over time, funny enough, it kind of becomes that. You know, it kind of becomes like, okay, you have to, because in order for you to perform at whatever your best level is, as far as you've trained at that moment, it's just, yeah, you need to tune in. That's why it's meditative in a way. You different tricks and things. But I think one thing for me is I never really like some dancers are good at like doing ciphers, like they would cipher before their battles or like be part of like a jam before their battles and stuff like this. Yeah, probably one thing I've always done consistently is like not do that. Like I keep to myself and just like try to keep to. You still connect with people, but you just like need that moment to just feel in your body. So mentally it would be just like taking a step back, being on a corner, stretching, doing some basic moves within the style that you're about to go in and battle, and then just like breathe through it. Not that extravagant, but I think that's what I do to mentally prepare at this point. It's been a while since I battled, so yeah.
Right, like since we did anything with dance at the moment, right?
Yeah.
But it's also a bit special. Like I know that a lot of people maybe look at us too and like, oh, you two are like dancers and you're a couple and you're in the same crew. So I want to get into that a little bit of like your relationship both to me, but also to our crew together. And one of the questions that I got was how you think that our relationship has affected the way you dance and which styles you have chosen to go for.
Wow, who asked that?
Anonymous.
I'm anonymous?
Anonymous.
Okay, so how our relationship has affected which styles I choose and how I dance, that's the question.
Yeah.
I think Kizomba is the only thing where the dance affects how I dance, like our relationship affects how I dance, because then we have to dance together. Or like, yeah, I think in that essence well, Kizomba by nature, I guess, is very intimate and it's very close. And yeah, I think it allows, and I don't want to speak for you, but I can speak for myself. It allows me to sometimes tap into just like a level of conversation that, you know, words just can't say. You know, sometimes words aren't enough. Words are just like, yeah, they're quite shallow. And dancing together or dancing Kizomba together can actually deepen that that bond.
We had some really good kitchen dances.
You've had great kitchen dances.
That's where the magic happens.
Yeah, that will not be seen by the world ever.
Exactly. That's the thing, right? Because when we are performing in front of the world, it's very explosive. And when we dance in our kitchen, there is no tricks.
It's not a show of us. Like, yeah, because I think that's the other thing, right? So we're in the same crew, and in many instances taught around the same time. Like, even though we're not teaching the same styles, we would still be teachers, right? So you have this profile. Oh, you teach this and you perform this. So you're an artist. And that's the profile you are actually a lot of times when you're out on the scene, which I don't know, maybe some people can fully be themselves in that, but I don't know if we've been able to like fully be T Mally in the kitchen for the world. But we do give a good show. So I think on that aspect is cool, but the kitchen dances are great. Right. As far as the other part, so what styles I chose, I think, and you know this, I think I've said this to you, I specifically actually made an active decision not to dance dancehall, not to take dancehall as a style, because I knew that was your style. And it wasn't because you told me like, yo, don't take dancehall because that's my style. It's just like, yeah. Coming into the dance world, I just also wanted to make like, okay, who am I? You know, like, what are my things? So, yeah, I deprived myself the the ability to like fully like dive into dancehall strictly because I wanted you to have your space and I'd have my space doing the other things. Funny enough, but then the funny enough is like the things I listen to, and you know this, the music I listen to when I'm not dancing it's either reggae or dancehall and then some hip hop. So
I am very, very happy that you do like reggae and dancehall, since those are like the styles very, very close to my heart. But I understand. I think that was, you know, I would hate to know that I would have affected you to not find joy in dancing dancehall, but at the same time it would have been maybe a little bit too much if we also danced every single style the same, if you would have gone into dancehall and whacking.
Whacking is the other one. I definitely left whacking for you.
Right. But I mean, we did other things. We did the hip hop together. We did Kizomba together. I already knew how. So, of course, I could follow you, even though we haven't done a lot together. Even Afro, we took classes together. Like, it was just a lot together. So I would say that I think it was a really healthy choice not to do every single thing, because it can be very intense. And feeling like you almost compete with each other at certain points. So yeah, but it's interesting that you have done this choice, and I wonder, I don't think a lot of people know that. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no worries. I'm still the guy with the rum in his hand, doing a nalinga every time.
Oh, for sure. Like, one day, man, we're gonna do some dope dancehall video, so people can know how talented you are.
But funny enough though, so I didn't choose dancehall as a style, but I have performed at a piece that was so I think that's if I can take something one up, then yeah, I've done a theater performance with your style.
Exactly. Yeah, no, for sure. Like, you completely deserve that one. I wish I could say the same thing about like rap, but unfortunately I don't. I think it's a bit funny that I became a host and not being able to rap.
It's mad funny, yo. That is hilarious. Yeah. It's mad funny.
So in a way, I feel like you started out as like a child host and I just kind of like slipped in somehow, thinking that, oh, this is something I can do. Never been on the mic, never been singing, never been rapping, but just like wanting to be on the mic. So I take that. We have one.
Yeah, but you're rocking it though. I think it's, I mean, okay, so if I could ask a question to you. The thing is, so I've known you as a dancer. When we first started, like when we got together, you were mostly dancing. I think the hosting kind of grew over time. But can you pinpoint a specific moment where you were like, ooh, this thing, I would like to do this thing more, which is the hosting? Like, when did that happen? What was that?
I think it was like both the feeling of I have been on so many battles and so many dance events where sometimes I just wouldn't feel the host. Like, I wouldn't feel encouraged by the host, but rather, you know, some people just don't have the patience, and it's different hosting styles, but I would always be a bit like, I wouldn't say annoyed, but a bit disturbed with hosts that would be too angry on the audience, not clapping constantly for 8 hours, because we all know battles are so long. And as an audience, you're not going to have, you cannot clap the whole day. Like, you cannot cheer and scream and do all those constantly the same high level the entire day. It's impossible. So when you're a host, I really think that it's so important to encourage and encourage the audience and bigging them up, and also be grateful for them because they are actually the ones creating the atmosphere. And I just think that at one point I felt like I would love to give this a try because I think somehow that I could connect with people. I'm not scared to talk in front of people, and I know the rules of battle. So like, I would love to give it a shot. And it just started at that school battle at Showdown at Twisted Feet in like one dance room. And I never ever thought that I could be doing it on like international events and international battles in front of hundreds of people. But when I am up there, I just completely feel like I get to be one part of myself that I never knew I had. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. No, I mean, I think it's wonderful. I think it's, it's one of the things that I can appreciate with your journey on who you are becoming and stuff. It's just like, yeah, well, it's actually a genuine part of you. Like, if anyone that knows you and has spent enough time with you in conversations, yeah, you are, the host is who you are. I think that's a characteristic we can give Teaser. T is a host, and not just like hosting people, but just like in conversations. I think you're good in, you're quite good in moderating and carrying conversations, whether you need to engage yourself or whether you need to kind of like, okay, lead a conversation somewhere. So it's like a natural thing that you've just grown into, huh? You've put your...
Funny, like, you should get an award. To be together with me, like, it requires a lot of patience. I ask a lot of questions. I realize that when I talk with people, it's like always the asking questions. And you are like the one on like a daily basis. It could just fly out and from anywhere, like, babe, like, what do you think happens when we create good karma? Like, they just, it's just random. Like, I have seen you getting the most weird questions and being so patient and loving and just being like, okay, we're doing this. All right, let's sit down. Talk yeah. about this.
Yeah, no worries. I think you of all the funny questions you've asked, there's a few good ones in there, you know.
Right. Well, I'm practicing, you know, all my podcast questions on you as well. So okay, so let me go on. I have a bunch of other ones. When, this is a good one. When do you feel most inspired? And do you have any dancers that have influenced you the most?
Okay, so I think I feel the most inspired when... Actually, I'm the most inspired when I see people who love what they're doing actually do what they're doing. So if I go back to my mom inspires me a lot because she can set her heart to do something and really do it. That can give me like a bunch of inspiration. Also when it's like, when you see cool projects done, it's just like, wow, these guys were able to do this. You know, I'm trying to think of Skill Bill. Skill Bill is a crew from Gothenburg, Sweden, and they had a theater performance at Frilagret, which is like a small event space. And I remember going to this performance of theirs, and it was a very simple concept, really. It's a training room, and you know,
a cipher.
It's a cipher, and they're basically in a cipher. I think there were four of them, and they're emulating this very simple concept of the cipher. And that left me very inspired. Like, wow, you could take a small aspect of this, like small aspect of something, and just blow it up into something much deeper. Start talking about like how people feel in the cipher, inclusion, not inclusion, et cetera, et cetera. As far as dances go, I've had a few. One that's a constant, and I think you introduced him to me, is B-Boy Cloud. I think B-Boy Cloud is, I think he's a fantastic artist. And then if I think of like other people that I've seen over time and like under like really like their journey and like their dance, Nyako is definitely one of them. Mamson, when I was dancing house, was definitely one of them. Someone like really like on an international level, but even locally, like there, we had a bunch of cool, like in Gothenburg, there are a bunch of dope dancers that when I first started out, I was just looking up to them or just respected their dedication to the arts, like Ashkan, Sasha, Brian, Julian, I would say Sarion, Ernesto, like, you know, there are a bunch of these gems that, you know, people know them if you're around, if you're in that area. Oh, Nina as well, actually. Oof. Jesus. yo Nina, yo, you know, straight salute. But I mean, it's there are many different dancers that have inspired me, but if I had to pick like people that I have kind of even tried to emulate my style after, I would say when I was dancing house, it was definitely Mamson, and then I started looking at Capella. Actually, the whole Serial Steppers I thought were cool. And then as I was moving to like to more towards hip hop, then I started looking at Nyako. I also started looking at Frankie D from Germany. I think Frankie D is dope. There are a bunch of others as well. Sorry.
Yeah, no, but there are so many. So it's interesting to hear which ones that have like stuck with you. And talking about like Skill Bill being a crew creating performances, you know, Fuse Fam, your crew has done, or our crew has done the same. One of the questions that was asked was, what is one thing that you have learned from being in a crew that you wouldn't have learned otherwise?
It takes a village. It takes a village. All those acronyms. It takes a village. Many hands make for light work. For sure. Like, if you're trying to do something, when you have a lot of energy going towards that one thing, it's a lot easier.
And when you have been creating like choreos or a piece that we've been doing, or actually just when you've been dancing, what is the one thing that scares you the most?
One thing that scares me the most. I think in the beginning, it was like that people will not like my style enough. It's like, oh, people won't like what I do. Like, who am I to dance this way? But right now, one thing that actually scares me the most is being given the opportunity, but not using that opportunity to actually speak with my art. You know what I mean? Like, I think now it's really important to whatever movement I do, it needs to come from a place of, I need to feel it. My inner, whatever that inner thing is, that needs to feel it and that needs to speak. If that doesn't speak or feels it, then that's almost in a way like a waste.
It's like fake.
Yeah, it's fake. It's fake, right? So it's funny because in the beginning, because I wanted people to like my movements, I would actually fake. I think maybe a lot of dancers do this. If not, then I'll be the first person that ever in dance history has done this.
We are told from the very first dance class, fake it till you make it. And I think that is something that sets the tone You know, like when you cannot do a step and you feel insecure about doing it, once you start faking that you feel secure doing it, that's when you actually learn it.
Yeah, so we're
told from a very early on to fake it until we make it. And unfortunately, it also may stay after we have learned the dance steps that whatever we do on stage should be fake it till you make it. And whatever we do when we're freestyling, it's just faking it till you making it. But when are we actually making it and stop faking it?
Yeah, no, exactly. When's the turnover point, right? So what is making it and when do we actually make it? So yeah, I think those are two differences I can definitely see now. Like before, it was more about trying to impress and thus faking it until you make it. And now it's, I guess somewhere there's still some feeling of trying to impress, because otherwise, the people you're dancing around, you want them to also enjoy your movements. But it's also coming now more from a space of, even if they enjoy it or not, I want to be able to enjoy it. Otherwise, it's not fun.
Do you still feel like you have any insecurities with some parts of your dancing?
I have insecurities in life. And like anything that you have in life, it's going to trickle down in whatever you do. So my insecurities in dance, if and when they do show up, have nothing to do with my dance and have actually everything to do with what's going on in my life.
That is a good one. Like it's literally like it transfer from life into our art. I never thought about that. Like I literally never thought about that, that the insecurities we feel in our dancing is directly connected to the insecurities we feel as a person. That was like a mind blow.
Yeah, I truly believe that though. I think you know me well enough to know that. Yeah, I think you know me well enough to know that I do have insecurities or whatever my insecurities are in life, but you also know me well enough to know what my dance is. So in all honesty, I don't, at this point in time in life, I don't think anything is actually wrong with my dance. If we were to just look at the dance itself, but if there are any holes in it, or if there are any of these, things I'm not satisfied with, like if I look at a video and I'm like, oh, I'm not satisfied with that, it's nothing with the dance. It's like it has zero to do with my dance at that moment. Probably is like my perception of, my hand didn't look good. But yeah, why does that matter? That's how my hand looked at that moment. You know? Yeah. So, yeah, cool stuff.
Well, there's also some questions about you and me as a couple. I knew this would come. I mean, like,
did you send out a questionnaire? Like, what is this?
I just asked if people could ask us whatever they wanted. If they could ask any question about you, what would they ask? And this is it came back so much. So one of the questions are, how do you make sure that you are focusing on your own goals and doing what your own souls desire when you are so close and living a life as a couple?
Wow, that's a heavy loaded question. Yeah. So the light answer. Yeah, the light answer is we love each other so much. And when you love each other, you know, everything is possible. So believe in that. I don't know. So if I take us as a couple, and I would love to hear your opinion. I'd speak on it. I would love to hear yours. If I take us as a couple, I feel like even though dance is such a big part of our life, it's also it's just a part of our lives. It's not the biggest part of our lives. Like I don't see us and define our relationship in the aspect of dance. I think our relationship transcends many different areas. Like, cool, we connect on a dance step. Cool, we can dance together. But okay, if we put that aside, can we actually have a conversation, and where do our conversations lead? And if you put the talking part aside, can we actually chill in silence and enjoy that, you know? And if we put that aside, can we, look at the future and think about the future together? Like there's so many different areas in our relationship you know, our two lives that are moving together towards, yeah, whatever we're moving together towards. There's so many different areas of it that all of those have to be aligned in order for our relationship to hold. It's not just the dance. Mm. So we could have been, we could be super connected on the dance part, but if nothing else is aligned, it's going to fall, mm-hmm. you know? So at least that's how I see it. Yeah. What do you think?
I love this. I love this, the conversation though. It makes, I mean, it's very few times where I only ask the questions. So, yeah, but I think you're right. And I think that we come back to that before, like even within dancing, it's just super important to give each other space to do our own things. And one of my goals of, for example, let's just say being a host within the dancing environment or working in theaters, like I made sure to take care of that and not wait for you to feel like you want to do the same in order for me to allow myself to go for that dream. And I think that you have a bunch of other goals as well that, you know, I will support you with. And even though I don't battle as much as I used to, there's nothing that would not make me support you continuing that battle journey. And you have your own goals. So I bite the answer and say, whatever you said sounds great.
The next question. Okay. So for the next question, you answer first and then I'll answer.
Okay. Well, the next question would be, how do you think that our relationship would look like if we didn't have the dancing in common? And to be fair, like, I actually think that we would still have had a relationship even without the dancing, since it wasn't there in the first place. Now, the love of music, on the other hand, I think that that would have been more of a deal breaker, because all the things that we love to do outside dancing somehow is also involved with music. We love to go to festivals that are just music festivals. We like to go to concerts. We love to see live performances. We like to listen to music in our home all the time. We like to see documentaries. We like to listen to interviews with artists. You know, it's like an ongoing theme. And all of our friends have somehow connected with us also by our music choice in many ways. And if, for example, you did not listen to any of my music styles, I think that we would have had a gap just from my side.
Yeah, now yeah, I think now I go. No, I think you're right. I think our love for, if dance wasn't the one of the connecting points, yeah, I don't think that would have been a deal breaker. Even if we love different aspects of music, I think somewhere there probably we would try to like, oh, but you still appreciate, you know, music. But if, like, for example, none of us like music, like if music was complete zero, I think that would have been hard. So I think actually one of the gelling things, maybe that's it. One of the gelling things in our relationship is that love for and appreciation for music. But even more so, the appreciation for art and mm-hmm. And culture, and just the mm-hmm. importance of art and culture in having a healthy life.
Yeah,
you know. So,
how do you think that being in the same crew or our crew, Fuse Fam, has affected our relationship? And is it a reason why you guys are so close?
Yeah, so my mind went to that. Like, I think one of the reasons why we are closer or close is because that we have a crew. You're part of something bigger than yourself, you know. And I think in many ways, if you believe in being in a one-to-one relationship, so like a monogamous relationship, you believe also somewhere that you're part of, in order to make it work, you're part of something bigger than yourself. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, this relationship is us, but it's also way more than us. Because come Easter, you know, we're going to be at family dinners. Come, you know, it's a lot more to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that being part of a crew helped actually that understanding, at least for me, when it came to our relationship. Like, yo, this is, yeah, you're part of something huge, something more than yourself. And you allow yourself to give work to that feeling, you know? But I think also, like, yeah, being part of a crew also, I think at times it becomes hard to discern when is it crew time and when is it like relationship time, because that's not always a given. When you're in a crew, you're in an organization, more or less, you're treating it as an organization. Decisions made or like how conflicts are fixed has to kind of work within for everyone. It's a one size fits all almost kind of thing. Whereas in your relationship, sometimes you need more time, and you can't be as organizational as you are in a crew. Mm. You just have to tap into something else. And sometimes those lines get blurred, huh? So those are two answers. I don't know if I know the first one was definitely an answer. The second one was more a ramble, but
yeah. Well, I mean, there's also a difference from when we just were in a crew and when we started traveling to Kizomba festivals. I know that a lot of people don't make it as couples when they are entering a couple scene where there's a lot of beautiful people, a lot of, you know, a lot of tension in the air. How would you say it has affected you to move into couple dancing, and how do you think it has affected us?
Wow, that's also a loaded question. Can we do like we did before, that you answer first? No, it's okay. I'll take it, and then you go. Because I think your audience would love to also hear how you feel about it. All right, so yeah, couple dance scene is interesting, man, because I think you definitely have to be sure of not only yourself, but you also have to have like a certainty in your relationship within the scene that is couple dance. Because as you say, there are a lot of beautiful people, and there are a lot of just tension in the air. It's basically the club. It's just like club for grown-ups, you know? So for myself, I think just being honest being honest and having a conversation with you about everything, but about thoughts and ideas, or, you know, whatever you're going through. I think the thing that helps, or at least helped me out, was that you were not in the couple scene before I came in the couple scene, and vice versa. Because maybe then that would have been a problem. We literally came in at the same time, and we were both as green as whatever. And we were both trying to figure it out. Like, everything was just like, oh, whoa, what the fuck is going on here? Yo, did you? And I think in many ways it became like, you come back and report kind of thing, you know, like, yo, Teaser, you were out. Did you see this? Yo, this happened. And you would come, like, yeah, you know, this, you know, it's a lot of that. And that actually builds trust, because you feel like we're in this together. There is no back door, or there's no, like, you don't know something more than I do about this. Mm. Yeah.
What has been then like one of your proudest moments of us entering this couple scene?
Okay, that's I don't know, one of my proudest moments. I think it's just that we're still here. We're still going strong. Yeah, every moment is a proud moment. It sounds cliche and corny, but yeah, every moment is a proud moment. I'm walking into this scene with you, and you're walking into this scene with me. Like, literally day one. So there is no prouder moment than that. Mm. Yeah. And I think you can add on to this, but it's not all peaches and roses. I'm not trying to make it seem like, oh, it's super colorfully fine. Nah, man, you just talk shit out like grown ass people. And through that, you figure it out. Mm. there is no magic answer, I guess.
No, I remember one of definitely my proudest moments in the couple scene with you was when we were battling at the Battle Kiss at Saturday's Kizomba Festival. Because
okay, nice.
Yeah, I really felt like that was for us a way to combine the two worlds in a way that we had not done before, in a sense. We also did it at Olympiads of Kizomba, but I think that battle at SKF was just different. And I remember feeling so proud of going in with you and representing exactly who we are and everything that we stand for. And I mean, Dwayne and Gabby was great battle partners, and I'm very inspired by the connection that they had. And so I also felt like we represented something completely different. So I was very, very happy about that. I mean, there are a lot of good, proud moments, and you have lived through so many. So like, if you look back now at your dance journey so far, what would you say has been your biggest surprise of your own development?
I think in the beginning it was just fun, and there was no deeper essence to it. And the thing I'm proudest most about during this development or this journey is just I'm able to find the same joy that I found in all the other interests I had as a kid. You know, like taking the time to learn things and understand things in their essence, even though you don't like truly learn or understand everything 100%. If I look back now, something that started off for just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this because it's fun and I need to, you know, move my body a bit, to what it's become, traveling, having a crew, performances, you know, videos, theaters, like, you know, it's like unfathomable. Actually, so yeah, I think the proudest is that, just like realizing that, like getting deep into something or getting so deep into it that I can appreciate, I can really appreciate the culture of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my ending question would then be one from your mom, and she asked if you actually would like to continue teaching your future kids dancing.
Oh, for sure. Jeez. Yo, my future kids, not only are they're going to be artists. They're going to be smart ass artists. That's where we're going with this. They're going to be like scientists, but then they're also going to be cultural scientists.
Like no pressure whatsoever on this.
Yeah, no pressure whatsoever. Like, they're gonna have me as a no, but I think I won't force it on kids. I think it's I don't want the people listening to this to go like, oh, he's gonna force this. No, this is not me gonna like. It's just I think there's something in. So my mom played basketball, and she's very good at math, but she played basketball and she found the greatest joy in, you know, something that wasn't math. I'm kind of good with like, so yeah, I do tech stuff, but apart from that, I also found joy in music culture. I find like there's something beautiful with having arts and culture as part of your life, as a steady pillar in your life. And if you choose to lean into it 100% and become the artist, that's beautiful, but then really lean into it. But even if you choose not to lean into it, having it there and having it as a beacon is great, because I think it's within art where we find ourselves. Our true selves is within arts and culture, where we actually find ourselves. Mm. So yeah, my future kids, if they choose to continue, like if they enjoy dancing, please, they'll get dance. If they want music, they'll get music. Like everything, paint, everything, like literally everything. Let them explore everything. And then we'll see what happens from there.
Awesome. And in the end of my interviews, I have always something called fill in the gaps. And you already know what it is. I start a sentence, you end it with one word or maximum the end of a sentence. No elaborations, no rambling around, just straight answer. The first thing that comes to mind, okay?
Let's go.
Cool. If you could never dance again, what would be your artistic outlet?
Music. Let's see, rapping, sorry.
Nice. If you could battle anyone in the world, who would it be?
Frankie D.
Nice. If you could give one advice to a dancer that just started, what would it be?
No one knows what they're doing. It's okay.
I love that. Everyone is just completely lost. And when you dance with someone in Kizomba, what is one thing you always try to make sure?
Safety. Their safety.
When you listen to one of your favorite songs, how does it physically make you feel?
Calm.
When you write your own lyrics, what are they expressing the most?
My inner explorer.
Dora the Explorer. Love it. If you could go to any place in the world, where would it be right now?
Right now, anywhere in the world? Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
If you could change one thing about this world tomorrow, what would it be?
Sorry, I don't have a one word answer to this, but I'll say love. More love. This is one thing that I would change in the world. More love.
What is one thing that you're absolutely sure about that you think that most people would disagree about?
That the earth is flat. No.
Please don't get me into this flat earth discussion. Please not.
I know. I had to. I figured like at some point in time I should make a joke. that most people would disagree. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I'm so sorry. I have blackness in my head right now.
No worries. And last thing, if you could ask me one question and I would have to be completely honest, what would it be?
Okay. What is the thing that you think you need to do in order to feel you've left an impact on this world?
Ooh, next episode. No, just kidding. Oh, wow. I would love to have created an experience or an impactful moment for others that they will never, ever forget in their life.
Okay.
And create a little tribe with you. That's also like priority.
That's number two.
Okay. No. That's cool.
That takes second place.
That's like,
that would, Yeah, that wasn't number one. That was like the second thing you said. So it's cool. It's cool.
I miss you, babe. I miss you.
I think the world will enjoy your impact.
All right. So, well, you know, you've been saying to me that I would never, ever interview you. How are you feeling now after being interviewed on Dance Pacific Talks, the podcast?
Yeah, it's cool. I think I was so unprepared for this. I was so unprepared for this, but it was fun. I think it's, I'm happy to finally have gotten the interview, you know, just a year later. But it is the year's anniversary, so I think that's a good thing.
It's the biggest thing. Okay. It's the biggest thing.
For sure.
I want to say thank you so much for coming on this interview, being open and honest and being completely who you are. I would love to know if people have more questions to you or to us. So with that being said, if anyone out there have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And babe, can you tell everyone where they can find you on your social media platforms?
Yeah, I'm Shane. Let me get down to my socials. You know, you can find me. Let me stop playing. I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram, Fuse Mally. That's FuseMally. It's there for my dance stuff. I'm a developer as well, so you can find me on Remarkable Dev. It's going to be really long for me to spell it out, but if you go to Fuse Mally and just check my bio, you'll find all the other links for places and things that I do. So yeah, that's where I am.
And also check out the amazing website you have created for us at www.fusefam.com.
Promo. Nice. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much. And yeah, I will see you when we're back living together.
Yeah, see you when you're back in the same space.
I love you. Bye.
Love you too. Bye.
Don't forget to click subscribe, comment below, and give us a rating or review. We have a Facebook page, YouTube page, and we are on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and all the other podcast platforms. We also have an Instagram, so don't forget to tag us in your favorite episode and share it with the world, because we read all of it.